Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
I am Mark Whitman.
We just got back from the Burrito Shack, and we're getting ready to record matches you need to go back and watch from 1993. And Mark, as we're on the way to Seneca, and you said, hey, there's this new place, Burrito Shack, I want to eat there, and I've eaten there several times. But on the way there, Mark, you kind of told me the history of how these places came about, like Moe's, and we have a Barberito's, but these burrito restaurants. Well, they, I did not have a clue.
There's a connection with Lucha Libre.
Right.
With the burrito shacks. Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
Are you going to tell
you? Oh, you wanted me to tell you.
Yeah.
About it. Well, they, in Mexico, obviously, they wear the mask, and they wear a lot more elaborate costumes. I mean, they generally, a lot of those guys wear full body suits, you know?
Right.
And they would want to eat, obviously, before the match, but they really take the mask seriously. So they don't take the mask off to eat.
Right.
And the food would get all over them, drip all over them, stuff like that when they were trying to eat it. And one of the local restaurateurs, who was a former Lucha star.
Yeah.
So he knew the identities of the guys. So it wasn't a big deal. He said, hey, well, what if I just take everything and put it into this tortilla? Because they generally would serve the tortillas on the side.
Right.
So he said, what if I just take everything, we put it in a tortilla and wrap it up? That way you don't have to worry if it's kind of like a napkin and, you know, you can use it for that and it won't spill out all over you. It'll all be held.
It's all contained. Right.
It's all contained. And what I'll do is, instead of you having to come to the restaurant, I will bring a little, and they constructed outside of the arena. It was a little, not, it was a deal that they could travel around with them, you know what I mean? But it was a little shack, was what it was, that they would carry around with. And the guys could go in there and not be out with the general public and take their masks off and eat their burritos, and their identities didn't get exposed.
Dude, that's...
And it caught on, and people, you know.
Yeah, and, like, a lot of people don't know. So next time you go to Moe's, like, you know, drink some Coke for the Double Dropkick Show, because
tell them that story.
Yeah, absolutely. you don't remember the guy's name, do you?
I think it was Pepe.
Probably so. All right, so we're doing a
new... Are you going to tell everybody that I'm full of crap?
So we've been doing this new segment on the show.
You didn't want me to spill the beans that I was lying about that, huh?
We're doing a new segment.
You wanted me to keep it going, and everybody would go, well, this guy on the double... And then I'd get ruined. Right now, you segue into that. You want to ask me legitimate questions. I can't, you know, so I can have fun with that, but I ain't going to let people walk away.
Well, while we're on, okay, while we're on telling a story that's not true, can I share?
Let me say this, that come from your desire to once a week see if I can improv a story out of nowhere.
Yes, because if you listened several episodes ago, I asked Mark, what is a body Donna? Totally unscripted. And Mark just says, well, it was back in the 40s, I think. There was a girl, and her name was Donna. And just tells this great story. And then he has hooked me. Because he gets to the end, I'm like, oh. And then he just says, man, I don't know what a body Donna is. And we just start laughing. And
and you said, from now on, I want you to improv these stories all the time. I'm going to throw something at you and see what you say.
So the other day on a Facebook group, I think we've talked about this guy before, but someone posted a screenshot. It was a screenshot of a Facebook post of a quote from Paul Heyman.
So if you can't trust a screenshot of a Facebook quote, what can you trust in this world?
But it was a screenshot of a quote from Paul Heyman praising Roman Reigns and just going on about how, you know, people were wrong about Roman Reigns and how he had a lot of potential and just had the background and had the desire and all these good things. And somebody posted and asked the administrator, moderator, who supposedly has been in the wrestling business and is known and has sources in WWE and said, hey, did Paul Heyman really say this? And his response was, hey, confirmed, Paul never said this. And he told me, why would I say something I don't believe? Well, then somebody posts an actual link to the IGN interview that this screenshot had come from, that it's a full-blown IGN interview on WrestleMania week. So I started, so somebody said, well, I don't, you know, one guy said, oh, I was sorry to even think that you didn't know what was going on. I'm sorry to even think Paul Heyman could ever like Roman Reigns. And his response was, hey, no offense, but I talked to Paul personally. Whoever the jokers you quoted are, know nothing. So then the IGN, the actual article gets printed. And I just kind of said, you said that he never said this. And are you telling me that IGN just made something up? Like a PWI interview.
Right.
And I just started asking questions. I'm like, you're telling me, am I going to believe a guy I just know from Facebook? Or am I going to believe IGN, a worldwide known
magazine? What is IGN?
I think it's like a gaming magazine.
Okay.
They used to have their magazines at Walmart, and they talk about video games.
Okay, yeah.
Like
I know
that.
What you're talking about. I know what you're talking about.
So this was... So, first of all, the guy, this moderator, this insider.
Is this the same insider that said they had to change all of their WrestleMania plans because of John Cena?
And to be honest, I'm just staying, like, the other night I was hoping to get banned. Like, I was basically calling BS on him. Like, dude, you telling me the guy didn't say it.
Right.
And I am reading it. And then somebody posted a video of Paul Heyman and Michelle Beadle from ESPN where he says the same things.
Right.
So this was his response.
I need to join this group because it sounds like there must be a lot of people in there who are in there to listen to this delusional guy.
Okay. So yes, I will send you the link. Because here's what it is. It's the people in this group are Mark's for this guy.
Right.
It's like they post stuff, hey, what do you think of this? Or, hey, this can't be right. And whatever he thinks. So he hates Cena and Roman Reigns. So everybody else posts stuff in there bashing Cena and Roman Reigns, trying to say, hey, looky there. You know, I just, you know.
Bashing who?
Bashing, what did I say? Cena and Roman Reigns.
Okay.
And just trying to kind of.
Let me know what you think you said when you listened to the show back.
Did I? But so he sends me a private message because I put a post a meme up there of Vince and R-Truth saying something about you know Brian Williams or whatever, and I'm basically just calling out the guy for lying,
right?
And he just sends me a one word Facebook message, hey, as if to say, you need to stop. That's how I took it. But then this is what he posted. To clarify, I stand by my report earlier. Although the interview is public record, the content is not correct. This author spun his own twist on what was actually said. I'll be reaching out to Paul again and can promise my readers the real story will be published. But I can tell you that there are severe discrepancies in what Paul actually said and what was printed. And now that we know the exact interview this was taken from, it'll be a lot easier to discuss in my upcoming interview. So this guy's telling me he's going to interview Paul Heyman, who's going to refute an interview he did on IGN for WrestleMania week.
Right.
And then I just said, okay. I said, that's great. But you're telling me Paul Heyman, as somebody as media savvy as Paul Heyman, goes into that interview and is going to say anything that can be misconstrued? And I said, has Paul Heyman contacted this guy? You know Paul Heyman, if you give an interview, you're going to read the interview. And Paul Heyman has not made any public statement to say, man, that's not what I said. I'm going to tell you, if I did an interview with somebody and they misquoted me, I'm going to tell everybody that they misquoted me.
Right.
Anyway.
Like, you misquoted me one time.
No. I posted what you said out of context.
Okay, well, that's the same thing.
But anyway, I say all that to say you got to love Facebook and you got to love wrestling fans.
I don't.
I was being facetious. Not to be confused with Bo Cephas.
But which you are not.
No, I am not. I'm glad I got that off my chest. That's been bothering me for a couple of days. I hope you feel better. And I'm trying, like, my goal is to expose this guy as a fraud.
Right. What if he winds up not being a fraud? How are you going to feel?
But that's the thing. That is the sad thing. Is there's a part
of me. You are confident enough.
there's part of me that really thinks he does have sources inside. Like, he even came out and said, hey, I'm the Mets fan off Reddit that's been spoiling the matches. He said, that's me.
Oh, come on.
That's what he said.
Come on.
So I'm not saying he doesn't have sources. I am saying I don't think he called Paul Heyman to say, I don't think on Monday he called Paul Heyman to say, man, somebody posted this on my Facebook group. Did you say that? Oh, no. Heck no, I didn't say that. Why would I say that? Paul Heyman knows what he said. Paul Heyman knows what interviews he did.
You think?
Paul Heyman's been a whole...
How many people interact with him routinely on that group?
This guy? Oh, everybody. He is the star of the group.
Right.
You post on that group.
Kind of like I am for our group.
You're right. You in our group, people post questions to you. People want to know your opinion.
I don't think they do.
I do.
You do, yeah, but I don't think anybody else. I was just kidding, man.
Hey, speaking of posting questions.
I'm glad that you think I'm the star.
Speaking of posting questions, let's move on to Marking Out with Mark. And the question of the day, once again from Scott Hicks. Why are we asking all of his questions? He was the only one that posted any. Spoiler alert. Here's the question for today. Mark, if you got a nickel for every time he said, yeah, yeah, every time he said that while you were telling a story, how rich would you be?
I could definitely have paid for my lunch today based on the last couple of hours that we've talked.
Yeah.
You do. You do that a lot. I hadn't even thought about it.
Oh, I know. I'm very self-aware, and I try to. It's just as I
are come. You really? Like, I had to point out to you that you call your friend Jeremy, Jeremy.
That's his name.
Jeremy.
That's his name. Everybody I know named Jeremy, I call them Jeremy.
I know that you do. You call them Jeremy.
Is that not their name?
And you've never noticed that you call them Jeremy.
Because that's their name.
Who wants to be Jeremy?
Listen, their parents named them Jeremy. And that's what I call them. How many syllables are in that name?
Three?
No, two. Jeremy. All right, so this episode... We're talking about 1993. We're not saying these are the best matches of 1993. We're just saying the next time you're mad about Raw, shut up, turn it off, and go watch some good wrestling. Not necessarily good wrestling, some interesting wrestling. Maybe stuff you didn't know about.
Yeah, man.
Mark, because I'm a nice guy, I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, I don't care when I go, man.
I'm asking you to go right now.
Well, back in 1992.
Yeah.
Take it back. Ric Flair had one of the best matches of the year, the 1992 Royal Rumble.
Mm.
But by the end of 92, going into 93, he had decided he wanted to return to his hometown.
Yes.
Because since 91, all we'd heard was, we want Flair.
We want Flair.
We want Flair. We want Flair. Well, he decides he's going to give him Flair. Things were not working out in WWF as well as he thought they would. I don't think he wasn't drawing as much. He didn't get the big money run with Hogan that I think he probably thought he was going to get. So he returns as a babyface. Mm. Arn Anderson now also a babyface. And they begin to do the Flair for the Gold talk show that was kind of like a talk show where Flair was the interviewer and Arn played Ed McMahon to Ric Flair's Johnny Carson, and they had Fifi the Maid.
Who's his girlfriend?
You want to tell this story?
Sorry.
Huh?
Sorry. I tried to catch myself.
you tried to reel it back in. he's gonna cut a promo on me. So anyway, Fifi the Maid, who, yes, Ric Flair is dating now, which is kind of strange, but it makes sense because she's a lot closer to his age. So when they return, they have several guests on, but then they have my favorite tag team, the Hollywood Blondes, Brian Pillman and Steve Austin. And they come out, and what should have been a respectful, friendly interview turns into Pillman and Austin mocking Arn and Flair for their age. This would lead to a series of vignettes where the Hollywood Blondes would produce a Flair for the Old, where they would come out on walkers and do promos with walkers and glasses and, you know, wigs and all kind of stuff on them, cutting these ridiculous promos as Arn and Flair, who were old. And Austin, does this great imitation of Arn where he's got his belly poked out and he kind of walked out.
He did that when we were in Anderson.
Yeah. If you've never seen that, it's great, man. But so with this all culminates, the Hollywood Blondes are the tag team champions at the time. We're coming up on Clash of Champions, and we get Ric Flair and Arn Anderson face the Hollywood Blondes in a main event in a 2 out of 3 falls match, because the gimmick being that you guys are talking about us being old, we're going to take it back old school, and we're going to go 2 out of 3 falls, and we're going to run you ragged, and we're going to take you around the ring, and we're going to work you up and down. And that was the gimmick of why they did the 2 out of 3 falls match. So then they get to the match. It's phenomenal. Yeah. I remember at the test.
We watched it together.
We probably did.
We watched it at Charles's house.
Did we?
Yeah.
Huh. I loved the match. It's 4 of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
And I just love the match. I love the build to the – where obviously Flair doesn't start the match because that wouldn't have made any sense.
Yeah.
Flair doesn't start the match. We get Anderson starting the match, and then Pillman and Austin taking the heat right from – almost right – we get Arn shining for a minute, and then we get the heat coming from the heel, and they just do every single – underhanded tactic in the heel repertoire.
Yeah.
As I was writing it down, I wrote, let's see. Heck, anyway, choking them with the towel.
Yeah.
Doing the Boston Crab with one of them pressing down on the other's forehead like he's adding extra leverage to it.
Yeah.
False tags, eye gouges, fish hooking, everything they can.
Yeah.
To set this hot tag up, and the crowd starts the "We want Flair, we want Flair, we want Flair." Finally, we get the tag to Flair. He comes in, woo, you know, and he does, and the place erupts.
Yeah.
Because for the first time now since 1991, we got Ric Flair back in a WCW ring. I think they were in Virginia.
Right.
I mean, they were in the middle of the Mid-Atlantic Flair territory. He goes nuts. They pins Austin or Pillman one to take the first fall. And as they were going to break, Michael Buffer announces the winners and new WCW tag team champions, Arn Anderson and Ric Flair. But they didn't win the match, obviously, at that point. One thing I noted out of this match that I found very interesting was Arn Anderson did an enziguri.
Wow.
As I was watching it, I took that note. Arn Anderson did an enziguri.
So on the last episode, we talked about the NWA title tournament, and as part of that tournament, Steve Austin and Arn Anderson faced each other in 92. I didn't go back and watch that match, but I want to go back and
I've seen
see what that is.
Then, anyway, we get to the, you know, the final fall, and Barry Windham comes out and attacks Ric Flair. Barry Windham's the NWA champ at the time, and it sets up. Which would go on to be, remember the finish of the Barry Windham-Ric Flair match when Flair gets his belt back?
Yes.
This kind of draws.
Yeah.
This draws Flair away from the Hollywood Blondes, and then they would be split up shortly after.
Yeah.
And you're going to talk about that. So I'll let you, we'll see how much you know about it, and I'll fill in the gaps for you.
Yeah.
But
I need you to.
But anyway.
Talk about the. So tell them about the end of the Flair Wyndham match.
It's just a strange, I don't know if it was a botch.
Right.
What the deal was, but Flair has Wyndham in the figure four, and the ref starts counting,
Randy
and he gets
Anderson.
To two.
Yeah.
And it's like Wyndham forgets to raise his shoulders up, and his instinct was to get his shoulders up off the mat, but all he did was pull his arms in.
Yeah.
So his shoulders stay on the mat. Yeah. They count to three count, and he has a horrified look on his face, like, I've just screwed up. It should have been a big win for Ric Flair, and I screwed it up.
And he immediately raises up and has the oh crap look on his face.
Yeah, he does. It's very much, I feel like it was a botch.
Yeah. He looks at Randy Anderson, and Randy Anderson looks at him, and Randy Anderson's like, no, that was three. That was three. Ring the bell, ring the bell. And Flair's like, what did just happen?
Yeah, like it should have been a big moment for Flair, and it just wasn't. It fell flat because of that.
Yeah.
Strange match. So that's like a pay-per-view later, maybe.
Right.
I forget which pay-per-view it is.
Yeah.
But definitely worth checking out.
Well, let's just stay with that theme, if it's all right. And I want to talk about the November 10th, 1993 Clash of Champions, where you have Steve Austin and Brian Pillman. The Hollywood Blondes have been split up, and which is sad to me. Because if you look back in history, like you said, they're two of our favorite performers, by far one of my favorite tag teams.
Yeah.
But a tag team that in the beginning and in the end just wasn't meant to be because of political reasons.
Right.
Can you shed some light on that?
It depends on who you talk to. I mean, we were kind of discussing it earlier, and Steve Austin now tells the story as you had Pillman and you had Austin, and they were a great tag team. How great they would be great as singles competitors. So we separate them. They have a feud, and it elevates both of them, and now you've got new guys for Flair to wrestle. You got, Austin being a heel, Pillman being a babyface.
Right.
That was the story that Austin tells now.
Right.
Because he's at that point in life. We've talked about certain guys who really can't wrestle anymore.
Yeah.
Don't draw a lot of money for crowds when they do shows, but they can do those shoot interviews really well.
Yeah.
But Austin doesn't have to do that.
Right.
They do the shoot interviews. They get paid. It's a payday for them.
Mm-hmm.
They say all kind of outrageous things.
They
reveal all kind of dirt. But now all the dirt's been revealed by most of these guys.
Right.
And there's no income left for them doing that.
Right.
Steve Austin's just not in that boat. He's got more money than he's ever going to be able to spend.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to go out and tell these stories of – even when he talks about the stuff with Bischoff. He'll say now it's the best thing that ever – he wouldn't trade that happening to him for anything because it turned out good for him. There's these other guys who had stuff like that happen to him. It didn't turn out good for them.
Yeah.
So they're very bitter about it.
They're very,
obviously, getting fired by FedEx was the best thing that ever happened to Steve Austin. So he's not bitter about it. He's had Eric Bischoff on his podcast, and they talked like friends. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's got more money than Eric Bischoff.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to care what Eric Bischoff did to him.
Right.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
So that's his version of the story.
Right.
The version that was going around at the time when it happened is a lot different.
Yeah.
That Austin and Pillman were so good that the top established guys didn't want to get in the ring and get outshined by them.
Yeah.
Because they were so good at what they were doing.
They were great.
That they were making everybody else look bad. Because I heard somebody say they split them up because Ric Flair couldn't keep up with Brian Pillman anymore. He couldn't keep up with Steve Austin in the ring. And they split them up for that reason.
And they were thrown together. I mean, Austin tells this story.
Yeah.
He's getting ready to get a run with the U.S. title with Harley Race.
With Harley Race as his manager.
And then he shows up and they're like, all right. And Brian Pillman comes up to him like, all right, we're working together now. And they're just going to be a thrown together tag team. And if you see their first couple of matches together, totally not matching.
No.
But they do something amazing.
They said, hey.
And they get this gimmick.
No, go ahead. This is your part, so I'm not going to.
No. And they get this.
You get on me for interrupting.
No,
you.
And it was.
It's one of my favorite things to talk about.
It was awesome, and you and I. That was when we went. We saw them in Anderson. We got the. We bought the belts.
Yeah.
And they were just great, and they got to see them wrestle Arn and Flair in Anderson.
I don't think we did. I think we saw them wrestle Steamboat and Douglas.
I promise it was Arn, because Arn came to the. Because Arn was talking to.
I know that. I mean, I'm with you, but I don't think that it was. I'm telling you, I think it was Steamboat and Douglas.
We'll have to go.
I know you want it to be Flair and Arn, but I'm pretty sure it was Steamboat and Douglas.
We'll have to go back and surely in the annals of history.
Yeah, well, I can find it.
Yeah.
I should have. I'll try to find out.
So anyway, we get to November, which went the day that your match was just earlier. We're not talking about a long period of time.
Mine's actually June 16th.
I mean, the Hollywood Blondes did not last very
long
time.
No, but they went down. And because there was a commitment, they bought matching gold chains. And Steve Austin, that gold chain he wore through his entire WWF run that he always had on, that's the chain that Brian Pillman bought him.
Hmm.
And they wore matching chains. They got matching trunks. They got matching vests. They created a gimmick. They took the Ray Stevens. The Blonde Bombers, and I mean, they just took all of that and kind of combined it. The Larry Latham and Wayne Ferris, the Hollywood Blondes, had been that team within the concession stand brawl. All this stuff ties with some of my favorite stuff to talk about. So next time I interrupt, you call me out on it, though.
No, that was good. Listen, when you interrupt, you have a point. When I interrupt, I'm just getting excited. I don't really have, a couple of things. They had gone to commercial. And when it comes back, Flying Brian's already in the ring. And Meltzer, in his notes of this match, and I'll just read it, Pillman came off as buried since he was the only wrestler on the show not to get a musical ring induction. So I know you throw out, Zack Ryder sometimes. And Zack Ryder's one of those guys that doesn't get a musical entrance on Monday night.
Wrong. I agree that is burying somebody, because entrances, when I watch sometimes on Hulu or even when I watch Raw, and they did it a few, I don't know how long ago it was when Daniel Bryan didn't get an entrance.
Yeah.
They come back from TV, they come back and he was already in the ring. I agree that is a form of burial.
Yeah.
Because the ring entrance is an important part of who you are.
They didn't ever do that to the Ultimate Warrior.
No. They never did that to Steve Austin. They never do that to Shawn Michaels. They dang sure don't do it to Triple H.
No. He's got.
They don't do it to The Undertaker.
Triple H got like five entrance songs.
Yeah. Yeah, he's. Man, Triple H, man, he's starting to make Dusty Rhodes look like a humble guy.
So Austin comes to the ring. He's brought, Colonel Parker is his manager now. They're wearing the same gear. Just like one of them, Austin has wore like the black version of their gear, and Brian Pillman is wearing the red version of their gear.
Yeah.
They're wearing the same boots. It's just this freaky kind of thing. And, they start wrestling, start brawling. Austin does one of my favorite spots of any heel where he's on his knees, one hand behind his back, offering his hand. Totally not a Stone Cold Steve Austin.
No, not at all.
But during this match, Tony Schiavone says, "This is turning into a Donnybrook." So you know what I did, Mark?
You did what I would normally do.
I'm going to tell you what a Donnybrook is.
Holy
Do you know
cow.
What a Donnybrook is?
No, tell me. I'm guessing it's got something to do with a fair somewhere when a fight breaks out. Go ahead.
1852. And you are correct. It was an Irish fair, the Donnybrook Fair, and
really?
It was famous for fight breaking out. Here you are, Rudy. Lucky guess. this is a match that if you give it five more minutes and a little better finish, it's over a four-star match. It's a great match. It's just not long. It's not even 10 minutes.
Now let me ask you this: Who does that? Your thought is,
I thought
a couple of more minutes and it's a five star match.
That was my yes. I watched this match and I thought it wasn't long enough, but I enjoyed it. It was good.
Hmm.
I thought it was like, but because, like I said, the end, Pillman's on the apron. He's going to do, I can't remember the name of his move, where he's going to do the springboard, and Colonel Parker grabs the ropes, and Pillman just, you know, flops on the canvas, and Austin pins him. And it, so it's an end that kind of comes out of nowhere, and it felt, it was very sloppy, but it felt very rushed, and that the whole match felt rushed. That, and I felt like, and especially in the light of everything that you just shared about the Hollywood Blondes, like they know, okay, these guys are over, and we got to put a stop to it. And so Pillman, you're not even getting an entrance, and now we're going to cut your time short.
That's yeah, I mean, these guys were starting to get some traction, man.
Dude, yeah.
They should have been the guys having the 30-minute matches on the card.
Right.
You know? I'm sorry that I guessed correctly about Donnybrook, by the way.
Nobody likes you.
I'm sorry. Like, how would I have known? I mean, I assumed they great. Said Donnybrook because there was a fight somewhere. And that's how I just...
So good.
I'm sorry, man.
So good.
I actually feel bad about that.
You shouldn't feel bad. That's great. I'm going to have to mute you.
But the look on your face was like, how did you know what a Donnybrook was?
And now as I think about
you
it,
you son like, of a beast thing.
All right. What you got? What you got for us next?
Well, I have a long story.
All right.
But aren't all my stories?
They're good. See, I speak in, I'll have 22-minute burst during a show.
True.
And talk 40 minutes. You'll have 2 20-minute.
Well, you got segments. A good point there. You got a good point there. But is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
Well, I got some more matches, but I want you, I can share some of my matches, or you can share your, I mean, how many more matches you want to share?
Oh, I have about this? Pretty much 2 cards worth.
2 cards worth.
Well, 1 card and then, yeah, and then 1 match. But there's a lot that goes on in that 1 match. So
you share, and if one of mine has anything to do with yours.
It won't, because they're 2 back-to-back pay-per-views.
Well, you do. Well, so you need to tell them together is what you're trying to say.
Yes.
So I'm going to, let me do mine then.
Okay.
Let me throw out some my matches.
Yeah, I was trying to get to the I need to do them together. Without us having to say it and hoping you
it's like we talked about at lunch. I don't pick up on stuff.
That is a fact.
March the 9th, 1993, from Japan, Dean Malenko and Wild Pegasus, a.k.a. Chris Benoit, versus Jushin Thunder Liger and I think it's pronounced Sasuke. Sasuke, Sasuke.
Great Sasuke.
Great Sasuke.
Yeah, this, anytime. I'm just kidding. This is, I wanted to get that look from you, and I finally got it. If y'all could have been here to see the look that he just shot me when I started interrupting.
Wait, is it a look of?
It was great. It was like, I can't believe you were like, you're going to take this away from me, ain't you?
I finally go and watch some wrestling. I can't even get to talk about it.
You ain't going to let me talk about
it. I create a wrestling podcast, and he won't even let me talk about wrestling.
You create a wrestling podcast. I hear you.
Oh.
You created a wrestling podcast a year ago, and you finally got around to watching some wrestling last week. So,
this was a
tell us about the match.
This was a WSW, World Superstars of Wrestling broadcast. So it's in Japan, but the commentators are Sir Oliver Humperdinck, really? The other guy, he says his name, but I don't catch it. And it's almost like you're watching ABC Wild World of Sports is the feel to it.
Yes, that was you can actually buy that. There's a DVD collection with a lot of that stuff on it.
See, I've tried to look for WSW, yeah. And I wasn't.
Check, it's 100%, I'm positive, it's on High Spots, because I almost bought it.
Okay.
And they had it up in Charlotte. That's where I saw it the first time. So a lot of this stuff is on that DVD set, I bet.
Couple of notes about the match. Humperdinck's great. just his commentary, just, you know, straight down the line. There's no personality. It's like two guys. It's like two regular sports announcers announcing the match. There's no personality in it, but it's good. It does its job. There's one part where Humperdinck says, "Well, I've never seen that move before." He said, "I've been in wrestling a long time, and I've never seen that move before. I don't even know what to call that."
Yeah,
and I'm gonna be honest, I had not seen the move either, and I am struggling to find the words to even describe it. Now there is
explain
a move.
Explain it. What was it?
I just said I don't.
I know, but you have.
I can't remember.
You don't remember the move that was being done. Just say that. I don't know the move that was being done when he said that. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't even describe to you the position their bodies were in. Anyway, now I can describe to you Malenko gets Samurai and he has him face down on that and pretty much grabs his foot and touches it to Samurai's head. Not Samurai.
Sasuke?
Is it Samurai or Sasuke?
I don't know.
It's one of them two guys.
Was he wearing a black mask and a black ninja suit?
I think it was Sasuke. But was dude, it? He
did
twisted.
You really watch this match?
I promise. I'm telling you. I'm describing the match.
You would know if he was wearing a black outfit with a mask.
Right? I watched. Oh. I watched like five matches in a row with masked wrestlers, and it's all blurring together right now.
Yeah, but Great Sasuke is one of the greatest masked wrestlers.
I know, and he wears
the... He's one of the great high flyers.
Samurai does not wear a shirt. He doesn't wear his whole outfit, but their masks are kind of similar.
If you say so.
Listen. Anyway,
Chris, did he have a shirt on or not?
I can't remember. I honestly cannot remember. I'm sitting here trying to remember.
Wishing you could remember just to make this go away. I understand.
No, actually.
No, I'm not. I was trying to figure out who it was. That's all.
I'm sorry. My notes are, not
failing clear. You.
Yeah. Pegasus Kid pulls out the Walls of Jericho. Thought that was pretty. Of course, they just call it a Boston Crab, but when you do a Boston Crab and you got the guy on his head straight up, that's a Walls of Jericho. They do a move where it's the Doomsday Device, but they do across a flying body press instead of the clothesline. That was pretty cool. There's one point, Malenko and Liger. I just put WTH. You know, what the heck? And I can't remember if that was...
I like that.
I don't remember if it was...
So sanitized.
I don't remember if it was because... Oh, my goodness, that's incredible. Or what are they doing? I think it was, what are they doing? Like, it was just... They couldn't kind of catch each other. You know what I mean? It was just kind of... There was just a very sloppy, disjointed sequence, which you just never saw Dean Malenko have.
Right.
Dean Malenko was just always so smooth in the ring. And then Liger wins it with a wins it with a Frankensteiner. Any thought? Is that a match you've seen?
I don't know that I have seen that match, to be honest with you.
And again, it's not a...
I don't think I have. I mean,
it's not like a spectacular, famous match. It's just I put that on here. Just, man, that's a good... Some good talent in the ring.
Did you see it on the Pro Fight database?
I don't think I did.
I didn't know.
This is one of those.
I'm just curious where you found it.
That wasn't even
an insult. I just wondered.
Because I would like search for. Because what would happen is I would search for the matches that were listed on Pro Fight database, and then you get the suggested videos on YouTube, and so that's a lot. So this next one was the same way, I think. July the 29th, 1993, an All Japan show, a sellout of 16,000, Stan Hansen and Kenta Kobashi.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Snot bubble wrestling. So before the match, you know, they throw the streamers in, and one of the boys ringside is reaching into the ring to pull out the streamers, and he gets too close to Hansen, and Hansen starts stomping him.
Yeah,
And so Kobashi comes over, the match starts, and great. And I'm just going to read my notes. It, slap fest. They just start slapping the poop out of each other. Uh-huh. It's awesome. We talked a little on another episode about the Japanese camera angles. They did some really cool angles with this. Love the crowd, the Kobashi chants. Just he's just the man in Japan. He's just the man, period.
He's the man, period. There's a lot of people who know what they're talking about would tell you that it's a toss up between Kenta Kobashi and Mitsuhiro Misawa for being the greatest wrestler of all time.
Yeah.
They were maybe not the draws that say a Ricky Dozan or a Hulk Hogan were.
Right.
But there are people that think that Kobashi is the greatest of all time. And I don't know. I'm on the fence about it, but I'm not sure they're wrong.
Right. the commentary is Japanese, and one of them sounds like Andre the Giant, who I'm pretty sure, God rest his soul, is dead by this time. He died.
Was it Giant Baba, maybe?
It just sounds like Andre the Giant. And so as I was listening to it, I just tried to imagine it was. Andre. You know how Andre. I don't want to impersonate Andre the Giant. Everybody move! You know? That's not
how. Everybody get down!
Anybody want a peanut? If you have not seen The Princess Bride.
What's wrong with you? What are you doing with your life?
Yeah.
Men love that movie. Have you ever noticed that? I don't know. It's like this one movie that men love that we shouldn't love.
I just
love it. That we shouldn't love it but what I mean is it's not a movie. If they told you the premise of the story.
Oh, yeah.
You would say to yourself, I don't think I'd enjoy that.
No.
But then when you watch it, it is an incredible movie, man.
And now when I
have it at home on Blu-ray.
Yeah, yeah. When I go back, like I try to show it to my kids and they're like, Dad, what are we watching?
My nephew has zero interest in watching that movie.
What is wrong with this generation?
I don't know.
Going to hell in a handbasket.
Well, they got to see the dang Avengers.
True.
You know what I mean? Think about that. Think about when we got, because it will probably be out by the time you hear this, Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
I mean, just especially, think about
it. Mark.
You know.
I'm not going to stand for you saying on this podcast that you think the special effects from Avengers is better than the special effects of The Princess Bride.
Well, you may not stand for it, but that don't make it not true.
Listen.
You know. So maybe that was never a thing for me growing up.
Any man that can star in The Princess Bride and be just as believable in Days of Thunder. I'm talking about Cary Hughes or Elvis or whatever.
Elway.
That guy. I want him on my team.
I heard that.
I like that guy.
And Saul. He was in the first Saul movie.
Golly. Talk about versatility.
Princess Bride, Saul, now, Days of Thunder, and Robin Hood. Men in tights.
I've never seen that.
I hadn't either, but I know he was in it.
We need to put that on our.
No, we don't. Okay. Listen, if I die and I missed Robin Hood and Men in Tights,
you'll be all right.
I'm gonna live.
Now, speaking of versatility,
you didn't get that, did you?
That does not really fit Stan Hansen. Stan Hansen, you know what you're gonna get.
Yeah. Straight up slugfest.
What I loved about this match, and again, you have seen many more Stan Hansen matches. Stan Hansen, most of the time, is charging ahead full bore the entire match. He teaches a lesson in how to sell the Japanese style. I think it's because Kobashi's doing a pretty good job of selling what it looks like to beat the slop out of somebody.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of Hansen's selling or he's really feeling.
Hansen was good, man. He, you know, Hogan went to Japan in the 90s. Early 90s, and he worked a few matches with Hansen and really wanted to bring him into WWF to have him show up and them do a big money program together.
Yeah, that would have been.
They really, really enjoyed working with each other.
Right.
Like, if you ever hear Hansen talking about Hogan, he's very complimentary of Hulk Hogan.
Really?
And vice versa. They really enjoyed working with each other.
Huh.
So.
In this match, Stan Hansen takes some bumps I have never seen him take before, which is pretty cool. The question I wanted to ask you, And again, this is just one.
I always hate this because I never know if it's something I can answer. Or not.
Does Kobashi have the hardest chop in wrestling?
Oh, good Lord. I hate those.
Okay.
Is something the greatest of all time? That's why you ask.
I know.
Him.
I ask.
I know,
him
but I yeah, he's got
top 10.
It's top 10. Yeah, definitely.
Top 3.
Top 10.
And after I watch some of these Brian Pillman matches, he's not far out of the top.
No,
five
Brian
either.
Pillman throws a heck of a chop. Now, I hated getting chopped.
Yeah,
it's awful. There's no way to fake
no
somebody chopping you.
I hate. Listen, you try to fake punch somebody and slap your leg for the sound effect. I don't even like how
go,
that feels.
Good Lord, you're a wimp.
I got sensitive skin.
You really?
I got sensitive skin, as we talked about
did you
over lunch.
Did you? No comment. Did you really? Do you think you could have made it in wrestling if you don't even like doing that?
Well, no. Nah.
Just curious, listen, man, because nah. That's... You
but
know.
I would have had, but yeah, never mind.
No, I don't think it would have toughened you up.
No, no. Hansen does a splash off the apron to the floor,
uh-huh.
And then power bombs Kobashi. Kobashi
yeah,
does
great.
Kobashi does a moonsault, which is awesome. Hansen does an enziguri, and then the end. Hansen's on the apron, and Kobashi goes up to the top and is going to pound on him, but Hansen catches him, and they're just hitting each other. But then while Kenta is sitting on the turnbuckle, Hansen lariats him backwards off the turnbuckle and then stumbles in the ring, falls on him, and pins him. And it was just, oh, it was awesome. And by the end of the match, Kobashi, one eye is swollen shut.
Yeah, man.
And he's like, cut me. And
they had some hard, any of that stuff we've talked about. If you watch something from Japan with Steve Williams, Stan Hansen, Terry Gordy, Kenta Kobashi, Mitsuhiro Misawa, Akira Tao, Kawada, Kijimuto even.
Yeah.
Any of that stuff, if you watch it, man, it's incredible.
So let's move from a snot bubble Japanese match to a snot bubble American match. Halloween Havoc. It's a non-title affair, October 24th. They've spun the wheel and made the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Texas death match between Vader and Cactus Jack.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you remember the setup for this match? Did you ever see the way this match came about?
No.
You've never seen the famous Cactus Jack Big Van Vader matches from WCW Saturday night when Vader punched him in the nose so hard you can hear it break?
I have seen that, and then the whole ear.
Ear thing happened in Germany.
Right.
And then, I don't know if that was before or after the match you're talking about, but then the famous match that they had on WCW Saturday night when Vader pulled the ring mats back and powerbombed Cactus Jack on the floor. And, I mean, flat on the – and Jesse Ventura broke kayfabe and went down to ringside to be with Mick Foley.
Really?
It is captivating television.
Yeah, I need.
Yes, that. if you've never, that's the setup for all of this. And Cactus Jack went away for a little while,
right?
Because he had been a big heel.
Yeah.
Then they did the deal with him and Paul Orndorff, and that led to this with Big Van Vader. And like I said, when he powerbombed him on the floor, Jesse Ventura broke character and said, "Somebody's got to go down there and check on him. This is not right." And he goes down and comforts Mick Foley, and they. I mean, it takes a long time of the Saturday night program to set all this up, and it was just captivating to me watching it, man. And if it's, I don't know, I know one of the matches is on DVD, but I don't know if all of them are. I'll have to look and see. I know that on the Greatest Hits and Misses has got the match where he breaks his nose.
Mm-hmm.
And they just had a series of matches on Saturday night, but that's where it culminated. And he went away for a little while, and they did this Where's Cactus Jack angle, and they were going around trying to find him, and they hired somebody to play his wife, and she looks nothing like his wife. They hired the kind of woman you think would be married to Cactus Jack, you know, to play his wife. And, you know, he lived in a rundown side of town. It was one of them kind of things. She had the hair, you know, the hair pulled up on the side of her head, one of them gals. And he was like living in a homeless shelter or something because he lost his mind from, you know, he got – concussed from the whole deal. And anyway, he comes back and yeah.
So they're going to have this match to kind of settle the score. Texas Death Match. Now, a couple of things about this show and match. It's Halloween Havoc. Tony Schiavone is dressed up like Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
They do about the worst job. I'm a wrestling fan. I've been watching wrestling 35 years. When I watched this two nights ago, even I was confused by the rules of this match.
You're right.
Because they put the rules up on the screen. Rule number one, no DQ. Rule number two, falls don't count. Do you know what rule number three is? There's a 30-second rest period after a fall.
Right.
You just told me that falls don't count.
No, it's not that the fall doesn't count. It's you get a pinfall on a guy, but that's not how you win the match.
Well, I know that now.
Well, that's how a death match works.
Falls count anywhere.
I was disappointed the first time I saw a death match. I got to be honest with you.
I was disappointed with
it. I thought somebody was going to die, and I didn't get to see it.
Falls count anywhere. After the fall, there's the 30-second rest period, and after that, you got 10 seconds to get up. So the great line from Tony Schiavone, we've spun the wheel, and now it's time to make the deal. So Foley does the elbow off the ramp onto the floor. And I don't know how they're wrestling between that old WCW ramp and the railing. There was like 2 feet of space.
Yeah.
And it is the sound of his hip. It is a sickening thud.
Yep.
Either Tony or Jesse Ventura says, this is nothing short of incredible. And it was. I mean, now there's – I don't know if you'd call this a botch. Caddyshack, they go out, man. There's like a graveyard set up.
Uh-huh.
There's like a set. They go fight up there, and he knocks Vader down these steps where it's kind of down in the floor. And Cactus Jack is going down there – to make the pinfall. And Nick Patrick says, I ain't going down there. They finally make their way back to the ring, and they get like this old school table that, you know, not the kind you see at church. And Cactus Jack throws it in the ring where the legs are pointing toward the middle of the ring. So it's not set up right. So they go fight in the other corner while Nick Patrick sets up the table for the bump. Yeah. And Jesse Ventura says, well, what's he doing? Setting it up for Cactus?
Jesse kind of sometimes played that JBL role.
Right.
Where he didn't mind pointing out when something illogical was happening.
Vader gets pinned more in this one match.
Than probably his career.
Right.
But pre-WWF.
Yeah. If it makes you think, you know, what could have been if him and Hogan could have worked a good program together,
right.
what they could have done.
It could have been great. Like Vader, with the exception of Bruiser Brody, I don't know that there would have been a better matter of fact, I would maybe put Vader above Bruiser Brody.
Mm-hmm.
And that being a perfect opponent for Hogan.
Yes.
If it would have gone right.
Yeah.
If Hogan had done the eight or 9 months of Vader killing him.
Yeah.
Before he finally got the win.
Yeah.
The way he did with Andre.
Yeah.
Andre busts him open. Andre does all this. Vader should have killed Hulk Hogan for a year. And then when Hulk Hogan beats him, it would have been – and Vader was so athletic.
Yeah.
That he could have just done things that nobody else could do with Hogan.
Yeah.
He really could have been one of Hogan's greatest opponents if Hogan had just not let his ego get out of the way.
Yeah.
And Vader, too.
Right.
Vader could have let his ego get out of the way.
Cactus Jack tries to do a sunset flip to the outside. And again, it's just this sickening thud.
That no nasty plunge.
At one point, Harley Race it just starts pleading with Cactus Jack, like, please don't take the money. Vader gets a chair, not a steel chair, a like padded chair to hit Cactus Jack with it. But it's like he picks it up and realizes this chair is padded. So he hits him with the legs, like the part of a chair that they would teach you in wrestling school. All right, guys, now this is the part of the chair.
Let me go ahead and stop you right there. Yeah. At no point in wrestling school did anybody ever say, here's how you hit somebody with a steel chair.
You know why?
Because there's only one way to do it. Swing it and hit him.
Yeah. Now, there is a point. So at this point in time, he hits him with the bottom of the chair, the legs. Dude, there is a spot on the ramp. He takes a baseball. Not one of them short arm swings. He takes a full baseball swing and cracks Cactus Jack up the side of the head.
Yeah.
And
they just had a working agreement to hit each other as hard as they could.
The crowd, you go back and watch this, the crowd's not really seen anything. I mean, the crowd that night, it just doesn't know how to react to the match.
Right. Is this, and if you're getting to it, I apologize, is this the one, because I don't think it is, when Harley bust Cactus open the hard way?
I don't know that Harley did. He does get busted open the hard way.
Over his eyebrow? Yeah, that's the one then. That's an old school wrestler's trick.
Uh-huh.
Where you take the knuckle of your middle finger, and if you hit somebody just right across their eyebrow, it'll split the eyebrow open. And it's an old school, and it's intentional, but it's a way to get around the we can't get juice. Because Harley pops him and busts him open the hard way. And that was, I think it was that match.
He busts open over his left eye. Now Vader, like I said, he goes down those steps. And when he's down there, he, you know, gets color. And then when he comes back up, he's covered. So they're out working on the ramp. And Harley has been, they're working on the ramp. And Cactus gets on Vader's back and, like, throws him in a sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Big Van Vader just drops back and does a flat back bump, except Cactus Jack is on his back.
Yeah.
The end comes with Harley Race hits, I don't know, what do you want to call it, a stun gun or a taser? I guess, which is the one that shoots out the little things at you?
That's a taser.
Harley Race, it doesn't come off well on TV because this whole time he's been teasing it. You know it's there. The announcer's like, what's he got? And he's been, you've seen the current the whole time. He's been turning it on and you can hear it. But when he does it to Cactus Jack, it's obvious. Obviously, it's not on and he's not really shocking him, but they sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like, I don't know. It just kind of, I wasn't able to suspend my disbelief.
Right.
Because you've already showed me what it looks like when it's on and what it sounds like when it's on. And now when you hit him with it, I don't see it and I don't hear it. So I don't believe. And then that's how.
Knowing Foley, I'm surprised he didn't really tase him.
And then Vader, you know, gets the win. Now, the interesting thing, and we talk about the Observer, is on this match, just a really long.
You talk about the Observer. I don't really talk about the Observer.
I formulate
my own opinions about
you
these
encourage.
Things. I was actually fixing to say to you, so what did Meltzer think of the match?
You encourage people to subscribe to it.
No, I do. Yeah, it's a great publication.
So, what am I trying to say? But there's really a rant.
I'm sorry, Heath.
Will it really a rant on this match of? How much is too much?
Right.
And this is the point in the business, especially when ECW comes along. And Terry Funk talked about on his interview with Jim Ross recently, just like, you know, what do you got to do? I mean, if you could go back, and even though it was a great spot, if you said to Mick Foley, would you go back and redo that Hell in a Cell spot? Like, he might think twice.
Yeah, I would hope he would.
About that.
And that was it. That was the height. That was like the ultimate hot shot bump. You know,
but it's like
nobody's ever gonna.
But the fans today, they always talk about going back to the attitude error.
Uh-huh.
When, okay, so much of that stuff that happened in the 90s was just, we know now, chair shots to the head, not good.
Right.
You're just, man.
It's funny. I was actually thinking about that because I figured you would talk about that match. That's why I didn't.
Right.
And when 18, 19-year-old Mark watches that match.
Yeah.
Hey, I just thought it was the greatest thing.
Right.
I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
But at 40, when I'm watching the ladder match, when it was over at WrestleMania, I went, whew, I'm glad those guys didn't take any crazy bumps.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just like your mindset is different. I don't want you to kill yourself to entertain me.
Right.
And actually, originally, you know, John Moxley, who you know as Dean Ambrose, his original storyline to be introduced to the WWF roster and it got set back was against Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Because he had worked for CZW, Combat Zone Wrestling. He had done a lot of hardcore wrestling. And the gimmick was he had confronted Mick Foley about, I watched you growing up and I watched you do all this stuff and I felt like that's what I had to do to get over. And you've ruined my life.
Yeah.
You've taken years off of my career because I've thought that I had to emulate you. So now I want to beat you up.
Yeah.
And I want to tell other people, don't do this to yourself. Don't do these matches.
Yeah.
Don't take these crazy bumps. Originally, that was going to be Dean Ambrose's gimmick. And Mick Foley's doctors put a stop to it.
Yeah, his neurologist said no.
He sure did.
What else did he tell him?
Oh, you tell us.
I just know his neurologist said that. That's why I had to get that line in. That's all I had to contribute.
Yes,
need to give the specific diagnosis.
His neurologist told him, no, you cannot have another match. And they worked a deal where Ambrose went on Twitter and said something about Mick Foley's kids. And Mick Foley responded, they didn't want to tell people Mick Foley couldn't wrestle anymore.
Yeah,
they didn't want to bring people down.
Yeah.
So what they said was he brought Mick Foley's children into it after Mick Foley had told him, you can say anything you want to, just don't bring my kids up. And he brought his kids up anyway. And they said Mick Foley nixed the idea of doing the program with him. But that's really not what happened. It was the doctors telling Mick Foley he couldn't have another match.
Oh, so that, ah.
But
so
they sold it as though a legitimate shoot. That I'm not going to do this with him. Foley used the term, I gave him the golden ticket to work with me, and the only stipulation I had was don't talk about my children, and he couldn't abide by that, so I'm not going to do it.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just too much.
And that derailed Ambrose appearing on the roster for like a couple of years. This is not like they were going to do that, and then the Shield happened 3 months later.
Right.
It was a long time before they were able to get him on the main roster, before they had anything with him after that.
Talking about too much, because this in the rant that kind of Meltzer, I assume it's Meltzer does, he mentioned some of the WWWA, the women's wrestling in Japan. So. I know you want to talk about your two cards. So there's a tag team match.
How long have we been going so far? Just curious.
An hour. Listen.
I'm just curious.
We've been going an hour. Oh, we went 20 minutes on.
That ain't bad.
On me busting on Mr. Says he knows Paul Heyman.
It's just you've been talking, so it seems like a lot longer hour to me.
That's because I'm setting it up. Because you're gonna get you gonna go Broadway here in a minute. I don't even know what that means, but I like
it. I know that you don't.
I know. So from April 11th, 1993, this is the Wrestling Observer, as voted on by the fans. This is their match of the year. It's a women's tag team match. So get ready, because Heath's about to say some female Japanese names.
This is always more entertaining than your actual commentary on the match.
This is two out of three falls. Manami Toyota.
You're and right.
Toshio Yamada. Mm-hmm. Versus Dynamite Kansai and Mayumi Ozaki.
If you say it fast enough, it sounds right.
Yes.
It?
So they're going to have a 2 out of 3 falls match. The first fall happens in the first minute.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ozaki gives one of them a razor's edge into a sit-down powerbomb. Yeah. Which is a pretty awesome move. And so let me kind of lay this out. I want you to watch this match. I'll put the link. You got three Japanese. Okay. I want to be PC. You got two women in this match that look like Japanese women. The long hair, the feminine outfits. One lady's wearing blue. I don't know who's who. I'm just going to. I know Ozaki is
I know. Manami Toyota when I see her, because she's one of the greatest female wrestlers, probably the greatest female
wrestler. Is that the one with short hair?
No, she's the one with the long black, and she wears the black, and she's got long black hair, really pretty. And yeah. the other girl
has feathers on her outfit.
What's the chick? The chick with the short hair?
Toyoshi Yamada.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, they had a series of matches. It was really good too. But anyway, go ahead.
So Yamada is the okay. I did write this. Yamada is the one that gets power bombed. She sells it for like 3 minutes that, mm-hmm. okay, we got to continue this match. And she's the one that's got to start the second fall. I did have a few. Toyota gets the hot tag and just does like 10 drop kicks in a row. That's all she does, 10 drop kicks. But then she does, on Ozaki, she does this really cool submission move. I don't even know. She's got feathers flying everywhere. Lots of submission moves in this match. At one point, I really think Yamada is kicking the other one in the head.
That's because she probably was.
Like, I'm telling you. It's uncomfortable to watch. But there's a lot of kicks to the heads. There's so many German suplexes, they almost changed the name of it to a Japanese suplex. That's how many they almost did.
How long did it take you to come up with that?
Just right here. The second fall, Ozaki is on Toyota's shoulders. She does a bridge back suplex with her on her shoulders and gets the second pin. One of the women throws, Toyota throws one of them in an STF, and she does it better than John Cena.
You could do it better than John Cena.
But Toyota does this rolling cradle move where she just kind of grabs her, and they literally she does this twice.
I forget who did that, but I've done it before. Yeah, we actually, me and another guy did it in a match one time. You sit down and you wrap your legs around them, and if you both roll right, you can just make a circle all the way around.
They do
the ring.
That a couple.
I cannot remember who did that move originally. But it's an old school wrestling move. Yeah.
There's some kicks to
like
the face.
I didn't do it in a match in front of people. Like we were just somebody had told us about it, so we tried it. And it is pretty cool and it works. It's not hard to do.
Ozaki gets a hot tag and just starts giving everybody the lariat. It's weird to see a woman just come in there and give the lariat. Yeah. And then Dynamite and Ozaki, they do the Doomsday Device. So to see two women do the Doomsday Device. But the finish is Ozaki gets up, not Toyota, the other one, gets her up in the razor's edge, and Dynamite comes off the top rope with a clothesline. It's like something I've never seen before. But it was just a really cool, like, is it like the greatest match I've ever seen? No. Is it like comfortable to watch? Is it do they do a lot of the same stuff? I mean, do I get tired of seeing them kick each other in the head? Yeah.
But I never get tired of seeing women kick each other in the head. I could watch that all day long, man.
I'll tell you what I'm thinking after we quit.
That's why I can watch Ronda Rousey fight all the time.
Never mind.
I probably would.
No.
Can't ask me, would you? Because I'll say yeah.
So anyway, it was a good match. We'll put the link up, and you know, it's definitely something. If you're a wrestling fan, it's something worth watching.
Any of those matches are good. Any of the All Japan Women matches.
Yeah.
Anything with Manami Toyota in it. Yeah. It's an incredible match. Her matches with Akira Hokuto are some of my favorite matches to watch.
So,
anything with her in it is good. And next, I think there was a girl named Cutie Suzuki. She was really good. And I'm thinking she got killed in the ring. I think that's the one. One of them did. One of the real popular females got killed at basically doing the same thing that almost killed Draws. The Liger Bomb. You get in one turnbuckle and you lift a guy up for a power bomb and run all the way across the ring and then jump and do the sit out power bomb.
Right.
And D'Lo Brown, I slipped and Draws fell. And it's basically the same thing happened with her.
Wow.
Doing the same move, but it killed her.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken. I know somebody did. It might have been Cutie Suzuki.
Cutie Suzuki. That's a name I will write down. So, all right. Want to set up these two cards. So here you go.
People will never know, based on your fine editing skills, that we just took a break to watch the new Star Wars trailer that came out. Because we're nerds and all our friends are nerds. A new Star Wars trailer drops. Oh, we stopped recording so we can watch that thing right quick. And we both, I think, will agree, even if the movie sucks, that trailer was great.
Listen, and I was thinking about it while we were watching that movie. If you're the kind of person, if you have anything bad to say about Star Wars, up to and even including Jar Jar Binks, please say it to somebody else.
Right. Yeah,
just no.
I don't have time in my life to just sit around and be negative about the stuff I like.
Listen.
And the stuff that I don't like, I just don't watch.
I think when I went and saw Amazing Spider-Man 2, I think the movie got over, and I hated that movie.
Right, right. We've had this discussion.
But those guys in front of me really liked it. And here I am, the old man's like, man, that just wasn't that good. And I'm just like, I think they probably looked at me like I look at all these other people. Man, can't you just enjoy it? It's freaking Spider-Man. Point taken.
Point taken. As I used to know, somebody said one time. Yeah, man. I just, I didn't think that, what do you call it, was all that great. The first, when they made the three new ones, what was the name of that first one?
Phantom Menace.
There you go, Phantom Menace. See, how absolutely.
It's not a cinematic masterpiece.
But I thought the second one was pretty good.
And the third
one. And I thought the third one ended well. But yeah, Phantom Menace wasn't that great. But I mean, so what?
Right. Yeah. So what? That's right.
I just don't watch that one. And I got all six of them on Blu-ray. So
yeah. And everybody that complains about them, you own.
Yeah, you still own it. Yeah. So yeah, exactly. Why sit around and complain about something I spent my hard-earned money on?
But just know when that seventh movie's getting ready to come out, we're probably going to do a show on Star Wars, and we're probably going to review that movie.
Probably.
Done.
That's good. If we keep on, I'll do a show on Star Wars right now.
Yeah, no.
But I tell you what I'm going to do instead. I'm going to take you back to 1993's King of the Ring. Bret Hart had his first run with the title. It was a little test run to see how he would do. Now, Hulk Hogan, he had dropped the title to Yokozuna, and then Yokozuna and Hulk Hogan had their little skirmish at the end, with the plan being that we would set up for a match between Bret Hart and Hulk Hogan. But Hulk Hogan didn't want to do it. He didn't, depending on who you listen to, he didn't think that Bret Hart was the right guy to go with. Plus, I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm guessing it was a negotiation tactic.
Yeah.
More than anything else, it was, I shouldn't drop the title to this guy who's younger and better in the ring and has all his hair. You know,
yeah,
but nowhere near the charisma
right.
of a Hulk Hogan.
Right.
But clearly better in the ring. And I guess he didn't want to drop the title to him. So that sets up King of the Ring, where now instead of setting up Bret to be the champion coming up at the next pay-per-view, it is let's let Bret win the King of the Ring tournament. Okay, so then you get Bret Hart in three matches. The first against Razor Ramon, which is the standard Bret Hart against a bigger guy
match.
And Mr. Perfect wins his opening round match, and now you get a rematch from their classic SummerSlam match for the which is a phenomenal match if you've never seen it. This match is incredible. But it starts with a pre-match promo, because at the time when they wrestled before, Mr. Perfect was the heel, Bret Hart was the babyface. Now they're both babyfaces. So Mr. Perfect had wrestled Curtis Hughes, Mr. Hughes, if you remember him.
Yeah.
The big guy, he wore a kind of like Big Bubba Rogers. It was sort of a very a similar gimmick. But Mr. Perfect is wrestling him, and Bret Hart says, "I hope Mr. Perfect wins." And what he meant was, "I want to wrestle Curt Hennig again."
Yeah.
Because Curt Hennig is this great wrestler, and we had these great matches, and I know that he'll push me to my limit, and I'll push him to his limit, and the fans will love this match because it'll be so great.
Yeah.
Well, when they call him together for the interview where it's both of them standing there, Mean Gene stirs the pot a little bit. He says, "Are you saying, Bret Hart, that you think it would be easier for you to beat Mr. Perfect than Curtis Hughes?" And he's like, "No, that is not what I meant at all. I didn't mean it." But of course, Mr. Perfect then takes offense to it. "You know, I still owe you one from SummerSlam. You beat me then, and I'm going to go out there and get my revenge." And Mean Gene says, "Hey, you guys are both. Mean Gene's just stirring the pot here. He goes, "You guys are both great second-generation wrestlers. Did your fathers ever face one another?" And Bret Hart goes, "Of course they did. My father won every time." Mr. Perfect says, "You don't say nothing about my daddy." He didn't quite put it that way, but that's what it became. My dad can beat up your dad, and I can beat you up. So it's a really good promo. Then we get to this awesome, awesome babyface versus babyface match. And this is the match, I remember talking about it earlier, where they do the suplex from in the ring to outside the ring. Because I actually thought at the time that, because it's Hennig that gets suplexed over the top rope. And it looks like he lands uncomfortable on his back, and he's a little slower after that happens. And I thought, and I don't know, but that may be the spot where he hurt his back enough that he cashed in his Lloyd's London policy.
Right.
I'm not sure. I don't want to say that's what happened there, but I'm thinking that may have something to do with kind of getting that started.
Can I ask you a question? Because I don't know. I remember, I think Bret Hart won his first Intercontinental title from Mr. Perfect. Is that
correct? Yeah, at that SummerSlam match.
Okay, is that the one? See, I thought that was the one where Hennig was taken off due to the back injury.
And it could be.
Because Hennig, that was a great match because they sold it because Hennig had him.
Can I just say something right quick?
Well, yeah.
You keep saying Hennig, and I hear that a lot. Hennig. His name is Hennig.
That's what I said.
No, it's not just you.
I know, it's everybody.
It is everybody who pronounces it. And I'm just a stickler for things like that.
Hennig.
His name is Hennig. It's spelled H-E-N-N-I-G. Hennig.
I'm just going by what the announcer said.
Oh, I know. But that's because Hennig rolls off the tongue.
See, I think Hennig.
Hennig.
I think, say it correctly.
Hennig.
I think that is his real name. And Hennig.
Yes, it is. It is his real name, yes. And you're right. Hennig is just what they call him.
But Mr. Perfect gets Bret in the figure four, and he reverses that into the sharpshooter, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I've
got to go back and watch
it. So I heard you. So, yeah, I want to go back and watch this whole series. So during this show, there are certain guys that you really like, and Curt Hennig's one of Mr. Perfect's one of them. That I just want to go back and re-watch or educate myself on those guys.
I wouldn't recommend it with Mr. Perfect. I think it'll ruin him for you. He's a guy that had he had some standout matches against certain guys, but he's also a guy that takes a nap quite often.
Well, I'm not going to watch those.
Yeah, just watch the main one.
Get
the Mr. Perfect DVD. It's really good.
Oh.
And it's got all of his good matches on it.
Click on that banner.
Or most of them are on the WWE Network at this point. You can even – I watched him in The Ultimate Warrior from a house show.
Wow.
It was really good. So anyway, Bret Hart wins a match at the end. And he goes on to the finals against Bam Bam Bigelow. And, you know, we talked about Shawn Michaels having a great run of matches with different Bret Hart did it in one night. Wow. Bam Bam got a bye. Him and Jim Duggan wrestled. And it was a short match. And then the other two guys, there was like a double count out. So Bam Bam, it was maybe Tatanka and Lex Luger, I think, were the other two. So Bam Bam gets a bye all the way to the finals because there was a double count out or double DQ in the first match. So the story is now Bret Hart has had to go in here after these grueling matches because he had this good match with Razor, then this incredible match with Mr. Perfect, and they're just grueling, and Bam Bam's fresh because his match with Jim Duggan was just a few minutes long. And they just tell this great story of Bret Hart can't beat Bam Bam Bigelow. Bam Bam's just so big, and, you know, he's so strong, and he's so tough. And then Bret jumps up on his shoulders and rolls him up in a victory roll, and he wins his first King of the Ring.
Yeah.
I want to go back now because we also see Hulk Hogan face Yokozuna in what would be Hulk Hogan's last pay-per-view and maybe his last television. He was with the company a few more weeks, but this was his last official real big-time money match with WWF for 10 or 15 years till he came back after the NWO thing. He went to WCW after this match. He wanted to put Yokozuna over instead of Bret Hart. So he decided he'd drop the belt to Yokozuna instead. And we get to the finish of this match, and we had grown up on Hulk. Right. We all knew how the Hulk Hogan match went. If I say to you, Heath, take me through the last 3 minutes of a Hulk Hogan match, what's going to happen every single time? Go.
Hulk up, get punched one last time, stand up straight, wag your finger, point it, you, the whole crowd's going to say you, and then you're going to punch the guy a couple of times, sling him in the ropes, big boot, drop the leg, 1, 2, 3.
Okay. That's what you think is going to happen.
Yeah.
And we go through the standard Hulk Hogan match, and he hits the big boot, and Yoko don't go down. And he hits the big boot again, and Yoko don't go down. And he hits the big boot again. And finally, Yoko stumbles around, turns, boom, flat in the middle of the ring. We all know what's coming next, the big leg drop. Hogan drops the big leg drop, 1, 2, and Yokozuna kicks out of the leg drop.
Wow.
You go back and watch it, silent heat swept through that building.
Mm.
It is a great – it's been lost to time. You could – just like when Brock Lesnar pinned The Undertaker.
Mm.
When Yokozuna kicks out of Hulk Hogan's leg drop, you hear the crowd go, because it had never been done before.
Right.
When he fought Warrior, Warrior kicked out of the boot, right? But he didn't kick out of the leg drop. No, I don't think he kicked out of the boot and leg drop combo.
No, he misses.
That's right. He misses the leg drop. Yeah. And then – yeah, so even when it was Warrior, nobody had kicked out of the big boot leg drop combo.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, go back. Everybody needs to go back and watch that moment.
Yeah.
Because it is silent heat from the crowd. They don't know what to think of what they've just seen. It's awesome, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's awesome when those moments happen. And it doesn't last as long as it did with The Undertaker. It's only a few. But it's just this thing in the crowd that sweeps over it because they know they just saw something special.
Yeah.
You know?
But they didn't want to see it.
Right. They saw something special that they didn't want to see.
Yeah.
Then some Japanese photographer gets up on the, and it's Harvey Whippleman, and he does something, and a fireball shoots out of his thing. It blinds Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan loved to have people throw fire at him to make it okay for him to get beat. He's still going out the door if WWF couldn't get beat clean. Yoko pins him and then pulls him in the corner, does the bonsai drop. And they say, is that it? Have we seen the end of Hulkamania? And we had.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes in the WWF, till he came back, Hulkamania died that night when Yokozuna kicked out of the big boot and leg drop. That's a big deal.
So it was okay with him kicking out of the leg drop, but not okay with him pinning him clean.
That's Hulk Hogan for you.
Not logical at all.
I'm guessing they negotiated something. He wouldn't put Bret Hart over, though. He didn't want to put over Bret Hart, but he put Yokozuna over. Because Yokozuna was a monster. He was bigger than him. That's all I can figure. I don't know why. I don't know why. Bret, he just wasn't, he wasn't sure that Bret Hart could draw. He was concerned about WWF's business as he was leaving. No, he was looking for, and there's this great story that Hulk Hogan went off to Hollywood, and they also tell it about Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan was going off to Hollywood. Bobby Heenan left because WCW offered him a lot of money. He didn't leave to go make movies.
Yeah.
And Hulk Hogan didn't leave to go make movies either. I don't care what they say. He knew what was coming.
He was going to get make Thunder in Paradise.
That, yeah. So they say.
That bastion of television greatness.
Yeah. There's, I mean, and I'm sure that was part of the deal. He was wanting to go do that.
Yeah.
But he had to know where he was filming and who he was filming near.
Right.
And what was going on. There's no way that they hadn't reached out to Hulk Hogan.
So, all right. What, so what was the next? I mean.
I ain't done.
I know you're not done.
What's the next? What?
It's like, what next great thing are you going to take us through?
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, if you shut up, I'll do it.
I did.
So, now we get to Bret Hart's coronation as the new King of the Ring. We've already had our match. He beats Bam Bam with the victory roll. He goes up on stage, and it's very weird to see Bret Hart put that big robe on and that big crown. And they give him the scepter, and they go to interview him about being the new King of the Ring. Because normally, up until this point, they talk about it being the first time, but there have been other kings, Harley Race, Haku, and they always carried on the king gimmick.
Yeah.
And they would wear the robe. Booker T did it when he won King of the Ring. King Mabel did it. They're not going to do that with Bret Hart. You know what I mean? He's Bret Hitman Hart. He ain't Bret the King Hart.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even the King of Hearts deal, what they gave Owen, he wasn't going to do that. He wasn't coming out in that crown.
Yeah.
So Jerry Lawler comes out playing the great heel, and he's, there's ain't but one king in wrestling, and that's me. This is when Jerry Lawler was at the height of his heel work.
Yeah.
Great. Incredible. We talk about it all the time. He hits Bret Hart in the back of the head with the scepter. He's got his own scepter and crown and all that. Hits Bret Hart in the back of the head with it, takes the crown, stomps it, destroys the crown, because Bret Hart ain't wearing that junk.
Right.
And we set up a match now, have to flip back.
Yeah.
I think it was Survivor Series, but I could be wrong. It wasn't Survivor Series, it was SummerSlam, where Bret Hart's going to face Jerry Lawler.
Mm.
And the winner of the match lays claim to being the true king of wrestling.
Right.
And Bret Hart comes to the ring, and Jerry Lawler's music hits, and very slowly he makes his way to the ring on crutches. And he's faking, clearly.
Yeah.
You know? And he runs down Bret Hart's family, clearly faking the injury, and calling Bret Hart a coward for wanting to come down there and attack a crippled man.
Mm.
How dare you, Bret Hart? That speaks a lot about you, speaks a lot about your family. But I tell you what I'm going to do. As much as I would love to come in there, and if I could, I'd come in there and I'd give you the beating of your life. But because I'm injured, I can't. But I've got my court jester, Doink, and he's going to come down here, and he's going to take care of business for me.
Mm.
Doink comes out with two buckets. He takes one, he goes over to the crowd, and he teases the old clown with the water spot. And then when he throws it, it's full of confetti. There's no water in the bucket. Mm. Then we got Bruce Hart and Owen Hart sitting in the front row. He walks over to them, douses them in water. And the great Bobby Heenan sells this as though it may be the funniest moment in the history of comedy. It's as if Jackie Gleason himself has come out of retirement to tell one last Ralph Cramden or Smokey and the Bandit joke. It's as if Richard Pryor and George Carlin come back from the grave and did a doubleheader to hear Bobby Heenan laugh at how great this piece of comedy gold, Doink throwing water on Bruce Hart, is. And then Bobby Heenan proceeds to tell the story that nobody knows. How that school bus was on fire. And Jerry Lawler stopped. And he pulled 27 kids to safety before we got here today. And in the process, he hurt his leg. And Bret Hart wants to attack this brave man. And when he tells the story, he tells it just like I'm telling it right now. And he makes you believe that Jerry Lawler's the man he says he is. And of course, we all know,
right,
that none of that,
right,
is true. He comes up with the great line, Stu and Helen never considered a divorce because nobody wanted custody of the children. Which I thought was one of the best line, best lines ever. Anyway, Hart gets Doink in the sharpshooter. Jerry Lawler comes up into the ring and hits Bret Hart with his crutch. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
There was no burning school bus. Jerry Lawler never pulled any kids out. But Bobby Heenan no less proclaims, it's a miracle! Jerry Lawler has miraculously been healed. Jack Tunney comes down to the ring. Now, Bret Hart's won the match against Doink. Jack Tunney comes down. He tells Jerry Lawler, you're going to be banned for life if you don't get in the ring. Because clearly you're not hurt. And this is what people paid to see, was you and Bret Hart. And yeah, you have a contractual obligation.
And what you have done is conduct unbecoming.
That's right. However, Jerry Lawler does not say reprimand this. He argues for a minute, and then he realizes he has no choice.
Yeah.
And he plays the ultimate heel of he's the bully when he's on offense, and he's a coward when he's not.
Yeah.
He plays that part so good, so much better maybe than anybody else in wrestling.
Right.
I think he's the best chicken –
yeah,
chicken crap heel ever. Yeah. I really do think he's that good in that role. Yeah. That he is the greatest of all time of that specific type of heel.
Yeah, yeah.
He plays it so well. And they finally get to the point where Bret Hart is taking the heat for a few minutes, you know, and excuse me. So he had his chance to do his thing, and yeah, then Jerry Lawler does his thing and takes over, and Bret Hart begins to fire up.
Right.
And if you've ever watched an old Jerry Lawler babyface match, how does that end, Heath?
Jerry Lawler kind of Lawler's up, but he pulls his strap down and then just beats the crap out of the guy.
And then he climbs up, he drops the fist, hits the pile driver.
Yeah.
As Bret Hart begins to make his comeback, he pulls his strap down.
Oh, yes.
And he goes through Jerry Lawler's finishing sequence. And he drops down, boom, puts him in the sharpshooter. Jerry Lawler submits. Now, Bret Hart lays claim to being the only true king in wrestling. You can't let it end that way.
Right.
It can't. Jerry Lawler's got to be the king.
Yeah.
Bret Hart ain't going to be the king. Bret Hart refuses to release sharpshooter. He holds him in it. We have about 10 officials come into the ring and beg and plead with Bret Hart, please let Jerry Lawler go. Please, you've made your point.
Yeah.
You've proved your point. Now let him go. Even to the point where they go down and say to Owen and Bruce, will y'all please come in the ring?
Please talk.
And please try to talk some sense into him.
Yeah.
To make him let the hold go.
Yeah.
Yes, we will. They go in the ring. They're talking to Bret. And they're not trying to pull him off. They're just going, come on, Bret. You've made your point. He's suffered. Just let him go. It's time to get out of here. And Bret still won't let it go. Finally releases the hold. They come over the PA and say the referees reversed his decision because Bret Hart refused to let go of the hold. He's been disqualified. Therefore, the winner of the match and the true king of wrestling, Jerry Lawler, as it should be.
Yeah.
But both guys walk away.
Yeah.
Jerry Lawler stays the king. Bret Hart walks away having got his revenge.
Yeah.
So we think. But this is far, far from over.
Right.
It culminates a few years later at their very famous Kiss My Foot match. Have you ever seen it?
I have not.
Oh, it is awesome, man. Where Jerry Lawler, and I'll just go into it real quick because it's not this year. But he goes out into a cow pasture, a horse pasture, and he's stepping in horse manure. You grew up on a farm. You know how that, when the sun bakes that stuff.
Oh, my God.
He's stepping in all this stuff. And then he, of course, puts his boot back on. They get there. Bret Hart wins. And rather than making Jerry Lawler kiss his foot, he removes Jerry Lawler's boot and sticks his foot. And he makes him kiss his own foot that's been walking around in all the manure. And Jerry Lawler throws up. It's great. It's a great – that was kind of the culmination of the feud. But they had – if you want to see great heel work, then you go back and watch this. And this feud, even though Bret wasn't really the champion, this feud is what was drawing. And this is what was keeping people interested in their product.
Yeah.
It was a great, great feud.
Yeah.
Did Meltzer call it Feud of the Year 1 year?
It was.
Was it really?
It was So, I talked about the 92 feud of the year. 93 feud of the year was Jerry Lawler and Bret Hart. Okay. Yes.
Well, they had a Survivor Series match, too, where it was Jerry Lawler in his court. And I remember it was Doink and Shawn Michaels and somebody else.
Right. Well, the one that I'm going to talk about in the 94
that's different.
Show,
this is after all that. I'm talking about at Survivor Series when Bret Hart and his brothers
93. Faced
Jerry Lawler and his... in the corridor. And I know it was Shawn Michaels and Doink, I think, but I can't remember. Maybe it was Crush or somebody like that. I don't remember, but there was somebody else on that team.
Anyway. You should have got King Mabel, King Harley, all the kings.
King Haku.
I forgot about Haku.
Yeah. All right, so that's my story of Bret Hart and Jerry Lawler and Hulk Hogan's final days in WWF. Sorry I didn't go into more detail about what they did in the matches, but...
No. Hey, we have diversity on this group of how we tell certain stories.
That's true.
But like I said, you can go back. Everything Mark just talked about is on the WWE Network. Great stuff to watch. I'm definitely going to go back and watch the Hogan leg drop spot. That was at King of the Ring?
Yeah, 93.
King of the Ring, 93. Just to see that moment. And what is it about Hogan and fire?
Yeah, if he gets beat, he wants there to be a real, some serious stuff going down.
Yeah, sometimes that, no pun intended, backfires as it did in the Warrior match.
Yeah. I want to throw some flash paper just one time. If you can find some, I'd let you throw a fireball at me. And get it on video.
That was my finishing move when I made my wrestler on WWF Vengeance, maybe.
My finishing move.
Hot Sub-P Mulligan.
My finishing move was the Vader bomb when I actually wrestled.
Yeah. You know, Mark, you always got a story topper stain right there.
Well, I actually wrestled.
You know, I was talking to Jimmy Boogeyman Valiant one time backstage, and
because I've been on cards with actual wrestlers, what do you want me to do about it?
Nothing. That's awesome. Listen, if I had three regrets in life, one of them is not being your friend during that period of time.
But I remember I tried to get you on a card. No, it just didn't work out.
But it was like, I just wish I had known, oh, these guys wrestle every other weekend? Oh, dude, I'd go see that. But again, that's back when wrestling wasn't as mainstream.
No. And there wasn't the means of communication that we have now.
No, you would have had to mail me a letter.
Right. You would have actually had to be sitting wherever you were at by the telephone in order to get it. In the five rings that you got before it told you that, before it disconnected the call.
Yeah.
That was it. I don't think these kids that listen to this don't understand that. You used to not just be able to get in touch with somebody lickety split. Yeah. You couldn't go on Facebook, find them, or Google their phone numbers.
Like now, if you really got to find somebody, email them, text them, call them, Facebook message them, send them a tweet, smoke signal,
Skype.
Skype. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Used to be, yeah.
Yeah, it was phone tag. That's why we got the term phone tag.
Yeah.
I call you and you don't get the message for 2 days.
And your mama don't tell you.
Yeah.
You don't find the note. Ridiculous. Hey, we want to hear your wrestling stories. We've been talking about matches from 1993. We pick these years because 93 is the year we graduated from high school. The greatest graduating class in the history of Pendleton High School. Bar none. That's what the Wrestling Observer said that year.
So five star.
Five star.
Five star class.
I don't know about that. I don't know how, if time is, I don't know how well time has judged us. Here we are 22 years later. So,
God, can you believe that?
No.
It's amazing, man.
Because I still remember us watching WrestleMania that year in the student government office.
Yeah.
Hey. We hope wrestling brings back fond memories for you, and we want you to go back and watch some of these old matches, and we want you to tell us about it on our Facebook group, The Wrestling You Grew Up With. On there, you can also ask Mark a question. Use the hashtag on there and on Twitter, Marking Out, and I'll make sure to ask him on that segment of the show. You can talk to us on Twitter, at Heath Mulliken, and...
at the DDK Show.
Ask Mark a question and mention me. That's all, you know...
That's what I'm good for.
You
don't even see the ones when they don't mention you.
No, that's no. So I got, because I used to be logged into both of our accounts, and so I could see everything. For some reason, I'm not. I think you blocked me on Twitter.
No, I wouldn't do you like it.
But anyway, you can go to DoubleDropKick.com. You can see all our episodes. We have some articles there. We post videos. We post DVD reviews. There's lots of banners there. One of the banners is Amazon Prime. You click on there, you're going to get a free trial to Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime, for $99 a year, you're going to get free 2-day shipping on anything you order from Amazon. But also, the Amazon Prime Instant Video is great. Lots of HBO stuff on there, lots of television shows, lots of movies. Really good stuff, and you can watch Amazon Prime if you got a smart TV or an Apple device. You can watch that pretty much anywhere.
Roku, that's what I watch it on.
Roku, that's correct. So Amazon is where most of the world does their shopping, so why not you? Why aren't you doing it just like all the other sheep? Click on the Wrestling Observer banner. If if you want to know the same thing I do.
If you want to find out where Heath gets all his information from. Click on that banner.
Hey, I have branched out to other sources.
Who?
Just different blogs, what I can find. Not this clown on Facebook. Who? maybe I should say, hey, what's Paul Heyman think about this match? Oh, dear. Oh. Anyway. So we want to hear from you. So go talk to us. You can download us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. And we're in the process of... getting on iHeartRadio. So, love to hear from you. Tell us about your favorite match from 1993. And as always, for the Double Dropkick Show, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.